Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Welcome into another episode of the Money Insights Podcast. I'm Christian Allen. He's Rod the Pod Zabriskie. And we're talking about how to invest with benefits. Does that sound fun, Rod?
It does. I'm excited.
All right. So we've been doing episodes that are in alignment with our six key benefits, right? Leverage, velocity, cash flow, tax optimization, asset protection, and estate maximization. And I'm getting good at that, Rod.
You got it.
So we've done a few of those. And today we're going to talk about the critical role, the critical importance of tax optimization in wealth building. I know everybody loves to talk taxes. It's like, okay, can I say this? I say that like half tongue in cheek, because there might be nothing that gets like investors, high income earners, high taxpayers more excited than, ooh, I got some tax options here. I got some some proactive tax strategy, some tax optimization, all those cool buzzwords that we use. So the question is, Rod, is it real, man? Is it real? Can we do it?
I'm here to tell you it is real. And I think the piece that people don't like is actually doing their taxes.
Oh, yeah.
But
you're right.
Learning
like
about
talking about
strategies that you, where,
that's
you can,
not so bad.
Where you can arrange things in a way where you pay less in taxes. Now that's what people are.
Okay. You're right. Although, can I just tell you, it still depends on who's delivering the message. Like,
good story.
Your average CPA delivering that message, like that's a little questionable. There's some good ones out there that are a little bit dynamic. So hopefully we can do better than the average CPA, at least like not the average. I should say like the, I don't even say prototypical. What is it called, Rod, when you're trying to put people in like a place, but they're not necessarily there, but you just like generalize them in a place? You know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. I'm not.
But it's not coming? Okay.
Word,
okay. Yeah. So there, I guarantee that if there are people listening right now are yelling the word, but I can't come up with it. But anyway, that's what's happening. We're going to try to deliver this and make it at least a little bit fun. Okay?
Like
that's my goal. That's my goal. Okay. So Rod, let's talk about it. First off, it is critical. Like it really is. It's far and away our biggest expense. So if you think about it, if taxes end up being as high income earners, especially if that ends up being our largest expense, and really it probably doesn't matter whether you're a high income earner or not, taxes are probably just your largest expense in some way, shape, or form, right? So anyway, for that reason alone, if you can come up with ways to reduce that element, bring in more, it is literally no different than bringing in more money, than getting a raise. Like, and if we think about it in those framework, it might be a little bit easier to get our taxes. I say that knowing full well that I have a really difficult time getting my taxes done. So I get it. I totally get where people are coming from, but that's kind of my initial thought. What are you thinking about?
You're basically quoting Benjamin Franklin, but we're going to update the statement.
I thought you were going to ask me if I was Benjamin Franklin.
I mean, for a second, you were sounding like it.
I only know one Benjamin Franklin quote.
Okay.
And I live by it. Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. So that's my one Benjamin Franklin quote.
I think you've even updated his quote on that one, because it's like earlier to bed and earlier to rise.
You're right. I've taken that to an extreme. You're right.
Okay. But here's the one I was thinking of. A penny saved is a penny earned.
We're
going to update it because nobody wants to just save a penny. In the 1700s, that was a thing. So we're going to say like $100,000 saved is $100,000.
It's $100,000 earned. Like yeah. $1 million saved is $1 million earned. If it's back in your pocket, it's like real money that I can use.
And it's not taxable now because you just saved it from the taxes.
Okay. Okay. So let's see what we can do to create some opportunities. Let's just see what's out there. We're going to explore some of the things that are out there that can optimize or minimize the amount that we're paying in taxes. Yeah. That's our goal.
And can I say one more thing? As it relates to the invest with benefits philosophy and the core benefits, I feel like tax optimization basically works in all of them, right? So in leverage, you save more in taxes and you part of the leverage is creating more value across the board, including more taxes saved, right?
Debt is not taxable. Just ask Robert Kiyosaki. Right. I was watching a couple of videos, a couple of shorts just yesterday, and he is adamant that that debt is not taxable. So he's like, I'm going to bring in tons of debt because I get tons of tax benefits. Now, I'm not saying I'm like that extreme in this, but the principle I 100% agree with, right? Like what you're saying is that by using leverage, I create a higher level of tax benefit than I would get for my single dollar on its own.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah. And then when I'm saving on my taxes, that creates more velocity, more cash flow coming to me on the asset protection, the estate planning. They all just are like intertwined as well, right? It all just kind of works together, and we're working towards this end. And you like to say, don't isolate one piece and just try to go after that, because you're going to, with different actions, we can actually do better in different areas simultaneously.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, so let's get into some of the really advanced. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to start with the basics. Okay. Yeah. So we're just going to give some really simple examples of stuff that anybody and everybody is or should be doing to minimize taxes, maximize the amount of money that they're bringing back to themselves, right? So some of the really basic things are like mortgage interest deductions.
Yeah.
I was going to say business expenses. That actually is a whole subsection of its own. Certainly if you own a business, then that's a huge element. And it gives you opportunity to do a lot of other more advanced type tax strategies. But anyway, if you're that person, then that's a good one. Health savings accounts, Rod, charitable contributions, some of these really basic things that we just know we should be doing.
Yeah.
And maybe in alignment in conjunction with that is like all of the breadth of retirement accounts, right?
Yeah.
So I've got my traditional IRAs, I've got my Roth, 401k, SEP, solo. You could expand that to defined contribution plans, which is basically like there's a variety of cash balance plans, 419(c)(3) plans. Anyway, there's a variety of different plans. But basically any plan that gives you a deduction is where this fits in, right?
Yeah.
So these are the things that everybody just thinks of. This is the stuff that your CPA is going to give you. So if you go to your CPA and you're like, hey, I had a great year, I got to figure out what to do with it, they're going to be like, boom, I got you. Have you contributed to your solo 401k yet? And you're going to be like, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're going to put that money. Anyway, I'm kind of joking. There's a place for this stuff and it can make sense and like it can be value add, but it's certainly not what we're talking about when we're talking about like real tax optimization in conjunction with investing and building wealth.
Yeah. These are the things that show up on your favorite document, the tax organizer CPA sends over, and is like, hey, just give me all this information.
Yeah. You give me these things and we're ready to roll. Okay. Right. So, but there's some things I like here. And the reason I brought it up is because there are things that I like, right? Like, a Roth IRA, a Roth 401k, like I think that can have a good place. I especially like it if it's like self-directed type stuff. Like you have, you know, where you can control and determine what kind of investments you're using inside of that. I'm not as big of a fan of self-directed IRAs. I get the allure to them, but like the additional, I wouldn't even say hassle, but hassle is certainly part of it.
Sure.
Makes it maybe a little convoluted for my take. I would almost rather just go in, get all my tax deductions from buying a piece of property, take the depreciation and bonus depreciation. That's probably the way I lean, but it's out there. And I think it's something in the right situation that could be useful, particularly if you're somebody who already has a bunch of IRA money. Let's say you're that person and you're like, okay, I'm not really a market person anymore. Maybe I was, and now I've shifted a little bit from that. And now you've got all this money you want to do stuff with, but it's all stuck in your defined benefit plan or in an IRA. Well, in that situation, it could be a really good opportunity to you still go into the alternative space, but do it inside of a self-directed IRA.
And here's the big warning we always give with these types of plans is this isn't necessarily tax savings. A lot of times it's just tax deferral. And how do we know whether it's going to be tax savings? Well, you don't until later on. And you're told how much you have to pay in taxes as you take that money back out of those retirement.
Right. These are tax deductions for the most part. They're tax deductions that may or may not result in tax savings. So let's give an example of this because I think it's important while we're on retirement accounts. So the question is, Christian, why would you say that it may or may not result in tax savings? And I'll answer this because you usually do all the explaining, Rod. And I'm going to make you explain a lot of other stuff. So I want you to save.
I'm excited to hear it. Okay.
Okay. So here's the deal. The bottom line is we don't know what our taxes are going to be in the future. We know what they are today. So if I take, I'll just take an example. Let's say I'm $1 million earner and I take $100,000 and I'm going to put it in my defined benefit plan, right? Yep. I put it in there and I get my deduction today. Okay. I know that I'm a high income earner. I know that I'm saving potentially, or I'm getting a pretty significant deduction, and it is resulting in an immediate tax deduction. We'll just stick with that. Okay. Yep. And it could be relatively significant. So then the question is, how do I know whether it's going to be valuable in the future? Well, the only way for me to know that is to know what the tax implication is when I take it out. Here's what I tell people. If you're a high income earner and you're even like a moderately good saver, you're going to be a high income earner in retirement, which means you're likely going to be in the same tax bracket that you are today. In fact, I don't know anybody that's $1 million earner that's saying, hey, Christian, I'm planning to be at like, you know, maybe 120,000 when I get it. No. They're going to be $1 million earners forever. Right. Yeah. So guess what? They're more likely the tax deductions that they have are going to be eliminated. So anyway, long story short, income's likely to be the same if I'm even a moderately good saver. So then the question is, what about the tax rate at that time? And here's what we know today. And this is something that people just don't think about, Rod. They don't think about the fact that today our tax rates are actually historically extremely low.
Yep.
Right. So if I took a graph up, it'd be great if I had one, but if I had to put a graph up on the screen and showed taxes over the last 100 years, we're like at a low point, which means that today might actually be a good time to pay those taxes, because guess what? Everything out there makes it look like taxes are more likely to go up over time than down. It's like, I feel like over the last decade, we've just been like fighting to keep them about the same, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're fighting, we're scratching and clawing, but like the debt, national debt goes up. Like how long can we logistically keep taxes historically low? Again, anyone logically looking at it would say it's likely to go up. So if I have a high income today and the tax rate's likely to be there later, then guess what? I'm deducting something that's actually a lose for me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to lose money on that deduction.
Yep.
That's what people aren't thinking about. And this applies regardless of where, I mean, I hear this from people in the physician community, like the fire physician community. They're always talking about, okay, the best years, those are the years that you want to do this kind of stuff. And while that might be true, if the end result is the same, if what I'm suggesting is true, then it actually doesn't help at the end of the, like, it's just going to hurt you. And anyway, so that's the long and short of it. We don't know if these are going to be valuable. You really have to evaluate and make sense of it. The time that we tell people to use retirement accounts most frequently is if they're late to the game, right? You know that your income in retirement is, there's no way that it's going to be as high as it is today. Yeah. In that situation, I can make sense of it. Yeah. Now, by the way, it's not a guarantee, because if tax rates are still higher then I still may not come out, but at least I can make sense of the attempt.
Yeah.
And I would just suggest that for a lot of people, if they thought about it, they probably wouldn't even be able to make sense of doing that.
Yeah. And here's another thing that I think a lot of people get misled on. So for example, an HR director might say, hey, you should put money, you know, think about your future, put money into the retirement account. And just think about this. You're going to save the tax today on a lower number, and that's going to grow. All this compound growth is going to happen it's on a bigger number, right? It's bigger number because it's pre-tax. It's all that growth that you're getting better growth than you would if you didn't have it pre-tax. And again, that depends on what you just said. What's the tax rate going to be? But what if the interest or your tax rate is the same today as it is when you retire and you're taking that money back out?
I know it happens.
What happens?
It's the same. Zero.
It's the exact same. So what they said is true. You have a bigger asset there because it was pre-tax dollars that went in. More money went in. It grew compounded. Therefore, it comes out at a larger number at the end. But that's just a larger number that gets taxed. And so if you do the math, you say, well, if my tax bracket's whatever, 30% today and 30% then, my net amount I get out of it is the same whether I pay the tax today and get it tax-free like in a Roth, or I get the tax deduction today and I pay the tax later. Same.
Tax strategy is different for different people, right? Yeah. And so your situation is the boss. I like that saying. It's one of my favorite. The situation is the boss, right? And that 100% applies in the tax world. So these things that we commonly think about is like, oh, just go to tax deductions. Rather than just doing them, think through it and make sure that they make sense. Like obviously a mortgage interest deduction makes sense, right?
Yeah,
but getting into the retirement accounts, that's where it becomes like a real question mark. And again, for a lot of people, a lot of successful people, if they play that out, they'll realize that that's maybe not the best long-term opportunity for them.
Yeah, and I'll give you a quick case study on that because I met with a couple who for 20 years, they had been building this real estate empire and doing it inside of a self-directed IRA.
Ooh.
And now they're at a place where they're like, we made a huge mistake because when you think about all of them, and in a minute here, we're going to hit on a lot of these tax advantages that come with investing in real estate. But basically, they had to share all of that wealth they built with Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam became their partner
all
from
along
day
the
one.
Way.
So now there's no way they can get any money out of that self-directed IRA without sharing that with Uncle Sam. So what they were doing at the time, and I don't know that I would advocate for this, but they were so disgusted with where they were that they were actually taking huge chunks out to just to get it out of there, get it out of the IRA, get it in a place where now we can get a lot of these tax benefits and actually have it benefit them directly rather than Uncle Sam.
Yeah, it's a tricky proposition. So maybe just the warning is even if you're trying to move to the self-directed space and you're wanting to build there, like know what the ramifications are before you do it. If it's just money that you're like, if it's assets that I want to build and just send to the next generation, like maybe, but even then, right, then you've got the problem of dealing with the IRA transfer rules. Like it's just,
right.
it's right. Hard. It's really hard for me to tell high income earners to use tax deferral. Like yep. It just is like at the end of the day, like for most of those people, they're not going to realize it today. But at some point over time, they're going to realize that they very likely cost themselves more or at least the same. And that's kind of a depressing thought. Okay, so let's move on, Rod. That gives us at least kind of an initial starting point. Mm-hmm. Let's move into start talking a little bit more about like what we would call advanced strategies or strategies that are just like not what the general media public is putting out there. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while you get a progressive CPA who like throws out some of this type of stuff.
Yeah.
But our experience is that they're hard to find. Like they just are. Yep. Most CPAs, tax preparers are exactly that. They prepare taxes. Occasionally you can find people who are genuinely good at, you know, looking for proactive opportunities to save tax. But that's, I guess here's what I would suggest. if you want to do, to practice proactive tax planning, my experience is that it's going to be on you, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not even as easy as just being like, oh, I found someone that I like and he's proactive, he or she's proactive, therefore this. Like, if you want that to be the case, it really is on you to do that. So we're going to give some ideas, talk about some of the things that you can be thinking about. Maybe it's stuff that you bring to your CPA to look for opportunities to improve your tax position. Okay, Rod, kick us off.
Okay, so now in the advanced tax strategy section, what I'd first like to do is talk about the best alternative investments for tax optimization. So we spend a lot of time talking about alternative investing, and there are a lot of reasons for that. Well, one of those is we can create better tax result, better tax optimization in the alternative space. And there are a few asset classes that just give us that more opportunities in that area than others. So the first one is business. And we hit on this a lot. And we do it because, well, first of all, a lot of people who are in the alternative space are business owners, entrepreneurs, or you know, a physician who owns their own practice, or a surgeon who maybe is in a hospital system, but then buys into the surgical center or something. That, and so there's some level or element where they are business owners. And if they're investing in real estate or some of these things, then they're usually building a business around that. You have LLCs that own it. You're tracking your expenses. You're doing all these things that a business does. And so there's a business element to that. And the fact is all of these things that we do inside a business creates deductions against our income. And that is what we're after, right? And the thing that's different here, the thing that's different with these deductions versus what we were talking about a minute ago with the 401ks and IRAs is it's a tax savings. Any deduction that I have against my taxable income that means I pay less in taxes today, they're never going to come back later and say, oh, you deducted it then, but now you're going to have to come back and take care of it later, right? I bought the vehicle, the printer, I paid a service, all of those tax deductions are a tax savings under the business.
Okay, so business is the first one.
Yep.
What's next?
Okay, second is going to be real estate. And we talk about this one a lot because of this, right? So when I invest in real estate, again, I get those kind of business-like deductions. I have expenses. I can count those against my income. But then there are additional benefits like depreciation. And then, of course, especially with bonus depreciation, cost segregation analysis, different things like that, we can create additional levels of benefit now, like today, so that, again, we're creating a savings. Now, in this case, someone might come back and say, yeah, but Rod, when you go later and sell the property, then they go back and recapture all of that. And so your basis is lower because you took those deductions of depreciation. And the answer is, yes, that's true, except with real estate, you have the ability to do a 1031 exchange. So if you sell that property and you buy into another property, then all of that basis carries over. You don't pay the capital gains tax at that point in time. And ultimately, when you pass away, there's a step up in basis, which just means that whatever your basis was, it could have been zero, right? Because you took the depreciation and you took all that, and your basis in that property is zero. But as soon as you pass away, then the basis immediately jumps up to whatever the fair market value is at the time you pass away. And so again, creating a true tax savings when you play it out in the right way.
Yeah, because you've been able to carry it through.
Yep.
Like, it has the life cycle that is not just your life, but into the next generation.
Yep.
Right. And of course, what's interesting about it is like, well, maybe interesting isn't the right word, Rod, but what's unique about it is that it's one of the only kind of opportunities that we have that we can get that deduction up front, that tax savings up front, using leverage, by the way. So we can get more than what we're actually doing. Like, I can put $100,000 in and get tax savings based on $1 million property, right?
Yep.
And I can carry that through to the, like, through the life of it, and ultimately pass it on to the next generation tax-free. And of course, if I do my estate planning properly, then it ends up being like estate tax-free, not just income tax-free, but estate tax-free. So like the life cycle ends up being incredibly powerful. And when you talk about it from a wealth creation standpoint, that's like how generations become really wealthy. If one generation does really well, and then they do the right things at the right time to make sure that they go on to the next generation, keeps it intact, you can build something really special through the generation. Anyway, so it's kind of fun. We're going to talk about that more in a couple minutes. But okay, so we talked about business. We talked about real estate. We talked about things, obviously, bonus depreciation.
What else can we hit on? And there are other assets that you can get bonus depreciation on, not just real estate. So, for example, you and I have invested in an ATM deal. It's not a piece of property. It's not a building or whatever. But because of what it is, we actually get bonus depreciation on it as an asset because it is a depreciable asset. And but we get the ability to create more on the front end with the bonus depreciation. So it goes beyond real estate even from that standpoint. The next one I threw in there. Oh, go ahead.
Can I just say one thing on that ATM deal? Like when we run those numbers, the impact of using the tax benefits associated with it nearly like double the return.
Right.
Right. So maybe not quite that, but it's significantly higher from an internal rate of return perspective just by having that ability to take on those tax benefits that go with it. It's super powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And then the next category I'm going to throw out there is life insurance. And we always debate, does this fit in the alternative space? Does it fit in the traditional? Doesn't matter.
It's like hybrid. Well, okay. So here's the thing. It fits into both, right? Yeah. Like, because the traditional world is using life insurance for the very baseline purpose of creating a death benefit. We use it for that purpose too. But if you understand how the asset works, like now you can use it to really, you know, ramp up what you're doing in the alternative space. And so for us, it absolutely fits in both places. For purposes of this, we're really focusing on how it can help us grow our other assets, right?
Yep.
Now I don't want to leave behind the incredibly powerful, just like real estate, the power of a death benefit, the power of a death benefit that comes through tax-free. Like, again, it just makes a massive difference. It also gives us oftentimes freedom, flexibility to be able to spend, to be able to be maybe more aggressive with the way that we invest, knowing that we have this stable, rock solid asset in place, both from a death benefit perspective and from cash value sitting there drawing a return.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
but I forgot to say, Rod, there is a tax benefit to it as well.
Yeah.
Maybe hit on that.
Yeah. So basically what happens is I'm putting money into this cash value life insurance policy. That money is going in after tax. But then as I use it, so in the investment optimizer, we're loaning against that to go out and invest, create value elsewhere. As I do that, that money comes to me tax-free. It's growing simultaneously. My account grows, well, they call it tax deferred. It just means I don't get a 1099 at the end of each year. And then ultimately I'm able to access those funds income tax-free. And then when I die, the death benefit also pays out income tax-free. So it works a lot like a Roth. Now, sometimes we confuse people when we say that because I'll say, well, it's after tax going in. Well, what if I put the money in to the policy, then I use the investment optimizer strategy to go out and invest in a piece of real estate where I create that bonus depreciation and these other tax benefits? Well, that means it comes back and within that same tax year, I actually saved on the taxes that I put in there. So it's still quote unquote after tax, but as a system, I still ended up paying a lot less taxes, even though I put it in the policy first.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good framework for people to kind of understand why life insurance ends up being valuable. And again, right, like we know a Roth IRA is, well, here's the thing. The reason that people like us like a Roth IRA are more comfortable with it is because there's not like Uncle Sam coming in at the end, right? I'm paying it today. And so I know what's happening, right? The problem with traditionals is that I don't know the result at the end. Here, I at least know that and I can kind of control that. Life insurance provides a similar value with some unique additional benefits being things like I can contribute a whole lot more money right? Sure. I can contribute as much money as I want, as much money as the insurance company will allow me to get based on the amount of death benefit I qualify for.
Yeah.
So if I make 5 million bucks a year, then I can throw $1 million a year into this thing. Like, no problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
create the system you're talking about.
Yeah. And what you've also highlighted is on a Roth, you if you make too much, you phase out of it and you can no longer make direct contributions to Roth. You have to go and try to do a backdoor Roth or some kind of get creative to try to do that. But in these policies, like kind of like you're saying, there's no rules around a limitation on how much you can put in or like okay, so income, I think, meaning you couldn't participate.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Okay, so here's a quick summation, Rod. I think that I'm going to say this for me. You can, I don't want to speak for you. I think my favorite tax strategy, and this is going to sound really simple, but it's like really powerful, is investing in alternative assets, period. Yeah. Right? Because the tax benefits are like baked into what you're doing. Like you can it just happens within that. Right. So I have to be, thoughtful enough to and proactive enough to like do them in conjunction, but they're basically baked in. I don't have to like get super creative in any other way other than just investing. Cause if I continue to invest, I continue to get the tax benefits each year. So if I invest this year, but I don't invest the next year, well, I'm not going to get the same. So the key is to be always investing. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, I consistently get the tax benefits, right? Yep. And then, like you said, we carry that life cycle to where I can be bringing off the cash flow without ever having to pay the taxes on the actual appreciation due to things like 1031 exchange and the step up in basis. So for me, like it's a simple concept, but it is from my perspective, the most like powerful, impactful way that people can be doing that or can be like eliminating consistently their tax bill. Like it just is, right? Now, that doesn't mean there's not other things. Like we talked about the business and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't mean from an investment perspective, there's not other things you can do. But a lot of them are like a little fuzzy in terms of how much impact they'll actually have. And for, a variety of reasons. So you have things like tax loss harvesting. If you're a more traditional investor, you can tax loss harvest and that creates like some benefit, but it's probably not super significant, right? Mm-hmm. Something. You have things like deferred compensation plans. Like we have a deferred comp plan. I wouldn't contribute to one if it was me, right? Like the only reason we have it is because when we produce business, the company puts it there.
Yep.
But from that standpoint, like I guess it ends up being money that's being put away that I kind of have that's not taxable.
Mm-hmm.
But I also just have to pay the taxes when I use it.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, like it doesn't feel like significantly different, right? But depending on your situation, that could be powerful. There are things that we've gotten into, we probably don't spend as much time on these days, like captive insurance. Mm-hmm. Captive insurance for the right person, right situation can be a really powerful tax strategy. It is under more scrutiny from the IRS than it has probably been in the past. But from my understanding, if you're doing it legitimately with qualified people that know what they're doing, then it's still a totally valid and reasonable way to do it. Again, the key from and captive is to make sure you actually need the insurance aspect. And as long as that's intact, then you can get the incredible tax benefit that comes with it. Yep. Maybe Rod, explain what the tax benefits are as it relates to
the captive insurance. Yeah. Basically what's happening is you have, in this case, you have a business that's producing a high revenue, let's say $1 million or more. And you're paying for normal insurance like anybody else, right? If you own your building, you're paying for the insurance on that. You have liability insurance. You have maybe errors and omissions or other different types of insurance that you're paying like anyone else. And you don't stop doing that. But you have a lot of risks in your business that you're not going to go out and pay tax on, right? Like a pandemic, for example, is something that could you pay for insurance for that? You absolutely could. But do people just volunteer, most especially before 2020, do they go out and do that?
Right.
No, of course not.
No.
But it's a risk. It's a real risk on your business. When what the captive insurance company does is it says, hey, we're going to build our own insurance pool or pool with other, you know, similar situations to kind of create an insurance plan. But then, and so when, if something like that happens, pandemic comes and we have a captive insurance company that is covering that type of thing, then we actually are able to benefit from that captive insurance company. But to the extent that assets are left over in the business that didn't, weren't used to pay out claims, I get that money back later. And so what happened is I got a tax deduction because it was an insurance premium on the front end, 100% tax deduction off of my kind of working income. And then later when what's left comes back plus whatever growth it's had, capital gains, I'm only paying long-term capital gains tax on that. So if my income rate is whatever, 40%, and I defer that today and then later on pay the, even if it's the higher, the 25, 28%, I've still saved a whole bunch by shifting it to that different tax category.
Maybe I'll give a quick teaser, Rod, because this is stuff we've done in the past. Combining it with life insurance, you can get, you can like take that tax benefit to the next level and actually eliminate some of that money that's been deferred, eliminate it from any taxability. So again, we're not going to get like into details on this right now, but we have a webinar on it. You can, if you're interested, always email us. Email us. Christian at moneyinsightsgroup.com, Rod at moneyinsightsgroup.com. If those are things that are like interesting, we're happy to get into more details, but there's some really like, powerful stuff you can do. And I think what we want to do today is just highlight the importance of it. We're obviously not going to get into every element in a massive tax code, but these are just some of the ideas. I mean, we didn't talk a lot about things like oil and gas. Like certainly that's something that can be a powerful way to, but again, like it comes with risks. And so you just have to be thoughtful anytime you're doing these. You want to be thinking about the both long and short-term implications of doing it.
Yeah. Okay. And I think there's one other element that we haven't hit on that I think is really important. And that is when I invest in real estate as an example, and I create this bonus depreciation, I get that deduction this year. And essentially I've created a loss, right? Which is why it becomes a tax benefit for me.
Right.
The challenge is I can't count that against my active income, my working income from my everyday, what I do here. I can only count that against my passive income. So sometimes people get in the trap of feeling like, oh, but man, that first year, it didn't have as much of an impact as I was hoping it would. But don't lose heart, because what happens is that loss gets carried forward. So then in future years, when you have passive income, then it can count against that. So again, it doesn't go away. You didn't lose the benefit of it just because you weren't able to use it in that year. And so what we see is that over time, there's this, as this snowball of investing grows, your passive income grows, and then you get more impact in that year as you get these bonus depreciation and these other deductions and other things like that. But so I just want to make sure people don't.
Yeah. That's an important point.
Get turned off by it, because at the beginning it's not quite as useful as it will be if you stick with
it. Yeah, that's a good point. And so you probably want to be thinking about, again, both the long and short term. Yep. The long term play is exactly what we're saying. It's consistently investing in things that create strong tax benefits, like real tax savings, right? Yep. And so to your point, you've got to know the rules for each so that you, because really it's about expectation, right? Like if I know what to expect and I understand how the game is played, I can play by those rules. So to your point, make sure you understand the rules. Okay, Rod, I want to talk really quickly. I want to talk about a couple things before we wrap this up. So I want to talk about just the risks of playing the proactive tax game, right? Because we don't want to suggest that there's no risk. Captive insurance is a good example of that. I mentioned that it's more, what's the word I used?
Scrutinized.
Thank you. Yeah. It's more highly scrutinized right now by the IRS. So if you put one in place, there is a high or probably even high likelihood that it's going to get audited, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to then ask yourself, okay, how do I feel about that? Am I comfortable with what I'm doing in my financial world to take on an audit if it comes? Is that tax gain enough value, enough of a value proposition for me to feel comfortable with that? And, you know, for someone who's, again, doing it all right, they're doing it the right way and creating that big of a tax structure, it probably is.
Yep.
But again, you know, you want to be thinking about that. So there's risks, and I think the risks are, well, some people don't want to play in the gray. And here's what I would say. All of the things that we've talked about are just like in the white area. That's like, mm-hmm. This is very clearly, like, even though that the average person may not be actively using these, good real estate investors are, good wealth builders are using them, have been using them for a long time, very successfully. They stay in that white ground. We don't want to get into that, you know, gray and dark area, obviously. So I guess my thought on this is, even though there are risks to proactive tax planning, basically being that probably audit risk, what would you say their other risk is to, you know, doing things more proactively, like we're saying?
Well, one of them, it may not necessarily fit in the risk, the category of like pure risk, but what, when you invest in something, so I'll give you an example on the ATM thing. Those ATMs are placed in different states. So income is revenue is generated in other states besides the state. I'm in Utah, so I always file a Utah state return. But when I invest in something like this or really anything across state borders, then that may mean I'm going to have to file a return in those other states as well. So again, maybe not necessarily risk, but going back to your whole thing about expectations, there may be additional cost or additional just time and attention and regulations and other things that I have to live or abide by when I do those things. And so it's just being aware that these things can happen. And again, not getting too discouraged by that, because as I'm describing this, you might be like, oh, well, I don't want to invest in anything that means I have to do that. Well, understand it, measure it in the process of making a decision, but don't let it dictate either, right?
I agree, Rod. So there's a couple thoughts I want to finish with here. Well, before I do that, is there anything that you're thinking about in the tax optimization? Like we've talked about, maybe just hit on really quick the estate planning component of tax optimization. That way we can bring it full circle. And then I've got some thoughts and then we'll close it up.
Yeah, that sounds good. So estate, well, it just becomes an estate tax, right? So at the federal level, there are some states that also have these transfer tax of a state. And basically the idea is if you have a large estate, then the federal government wants a piece of it when you die, right? It doesn't all pass on to your heirs.
Well, and today it's a large estate, right?
It is.
Like it may not That's necessarily, and it's all relative. So today, if you're, you know, if you're like 25 million, if you're, you know, married and filing jointly, like you can have a relatively large estate and still not pay any tax, but we don't know where that's headed.
Yeah.
And so that's an element, but something that we have to be kind of considering, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the part we do know is that in the next couple of years, that's going to be cut in half. So the 25 becomes basically 12, 13. And then to your point, Congress can make a change whenever they want, right? It wasn't that long ago. It was a million for a couple.
That was crazy. It was a million and 2 million. When I first got into the financial service business, that's where we were at. And so like anyone over a $2 million combined net worth was like, oh, I'm going to be, and you know, the reality is that like in the people we talk to, that's not that high.
Yeah.
Right. So
So optimizing tax in this category means that if either it's one of two things, either it's having assets that you know are going to pay that tax. And so sometimes people will buy extra life insurance, for example, in what's called an islet and irrevocable life insurance trust, so that the insurance lands outside of your estate and then can then be used to pay any estate tax. So that's one way people approach it. A second way is to actually move assets out of your estate. You do it when they're a lower value. It still counts against your lifetime exclusion, but you're getting it out at a lower value so that when you die in 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and the value is much, much higher, it's all outside of your estate. It's not subject to that estate calculation.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to bring it home here. Here's the way I think about tax optimization. I think of it in three phases, right? So I've got my today phase. I've got my future, which would be like a retirement future. Okay. And then I've got my death, right? Like, or next gen, whatever you want to call it. That mm-hmm. doesn't sound very fun.
That sounds better.
Yeah, we'll go to next gen. So those are my three elements. And if I'm a prolific wealth builder, like all three end up being pretty vitally important, right? Where I'm at today has a huge impact. Like the my ability to lower my tax bill today, it also gives me more money in my pocket that I can invest and build. So it's really critically important. But once I'm actually going to potentially use that money, well, that's important too.
Yep.
Finally, Rod, I would suggest that most people who build wealth, who are prolific at building wealth, they don't want to just give the money to the IRS. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah.
So what I would suggest is that all three are really, really important and critical. And again, if you're looking for like that generational wealth, you've got to be considering all three of those elements. And if you do that, man, it just makes a massive difference. So that's kind of my synopsis of why tax optimization plays such a critical role in wealth building. Do you have any other final thoughts, Rod?
I think it's well said as a wrap up.
Okay. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights Podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth-building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.